everybody. Welcome to Ask the Pastor. I am Matt Love. I am here with Pastor J.D. Greer. And I think we mentioned this in our last episode, but we're going to do a little bit of a series of some one-off questions. We just did a series about spiritual disciplines. But we're going to do a series of just some one-off questions we've gotten from listeners that don't necessarily fit neatly in a series, but are really good questions that we're excited to dive into. And we have a question today, JD, that a lot of listeners ask. So I think we're going to give, I think we're kind of combining some different questions that a lot of listeners ask. But JD, this is a question a lot of Christians are trying to figure out how to grapple with this. It's one of those moments in our culture right now where everybody has really strong opinions. It's very fraught conversation. It's tough to figure out how to navigate it with the Christian worldview. So, JD, we want to just process and hear you kind of process. How do we as Christians understand and think about what is going on in Israel?
Yeah, well, okay. So the most obvious statement that's ever been made on Ask the Pastor or its predecessor, Ask Me Anything, is that there's a lot of really intense views on this subject. And, you know, honestly, Matt, that makes sense because this is a topic that it combines a lot of things. It combines theology. It combines world politics. It combines even, you know, dimensions of intersexuality, that whole discussion. Mm-hmm. Particularly, you know, it starts with just eschatology for a lot of Christians. One of the top two or three questions I get asked after service or a request for me to preach on something, it's almost always, hey, how about Israel? Could you talk to us about Israel? Could you preach a series on Israel? This is not going to be a full-blown end times podcast. We've done that before here on this, but I do think there's a few points here that will help us understand some of the terms getting thrown around and how they impact the discussion. Premillennialism is the belief that that part of God's plan for the end times involves a 1,000-year earthly reign of Jesus that is still to come, and a physical part of that is a real nation, a constituted Israel of ethnic Jews that are basically at the center of that. The relevance to the discussion, and I would say, you know, the majority of Christians, I haven't done a study on it, but I'd say, you know, at least half, I think a majority of Christians would be in that category. The reason that's relevant is that a lot of premillennialists view the fact that Israel has their own nation. That happened in 1948, in case you have just, you know, forgotten your history class. They view that as a partial fulfillment of this biblical prophecy that God is reinstituting the nation. And that has led some Christians, premillennial Christians, to embrace what some refer to as the Zionist movement, which, practically speaking, it just means that you believe that, you know, this is part of that God's fulfilling his prophecy to restore Israel to the center of world politics. And so you just say that therefore, anything that advances Israel's interest is correct because it, you know, must be God doing it. And we see it in the Bible and it's going to be a part of history. And so therefore, you know, it's got to be right. And it means that a lot of Christians tend to give them an automatic pass, give Israel an automatic pass on questions. You know, their destiny is to be at the center of world history. At least that's part of the future. So anything that Israel does, you know, toward that end, they're going to be in support of. So let me just say this clearly before we get into anything else. That's not true. Not premillennialism. I actually do hold a premillennial view of eschatology. But the idea that we should do evil that good may come, or that we should wink at injustice, there's no view of eschatology that would ever make you say that a particular unjust thing is okay. As Christians, we're to be on the side of justice anytime, any place, anywhere, because God never needs us to wink at evil or to say evil is okay because it leads to a good end. We should unhesitatingly call it out, and we should always be on the side of justice. And that includes with this question, because there are certainly points in history and even some in this current conflict that you would say that is what Israel is doing. That's not right. That's unjust. Now, let me say one other caveat here. As a pastor, I typically don't wade into the finer points of politics or world events. Our listeners will probably know that. I'm always saying, I mean, neither called nor competent to be able to kind of get into the weeds on a lot of these issues. Not that I don't have an opinion or that I'm not, you know, don't try to be well read. It's just that, I mean, my calling is not that. I'm not called to be that kind of politician. What I do believe that I should do is talk about the principles, the biblical principles, the worldview that undergirds our approaches to these questions. And that's what I want to do here in this podcast. I want to talk about the dangerous narratives that have entered into the conversation that I think are important for Christians to identify and reject. One of them I just dealt with right there at the beginning, and that is the kind of idea that if you know Israel's part of God's future, then therefore anything Israel does is okay. But here's another one on the other side. Typically, the myth is that modern day Israel has no right to the land that they're currently occupying there in Israel. That Israel is basically this occupying power. Think something like Britain was in India, where they came in and they just took over and said we're going to settle here, or even like European colonists were in parts of North America or in Australia. And the idea is that because Israel is this occupying power that doesn't belong there in that land, then whatever Palestinians do to get them out is okay. I mean, maybe they're not choosing the best means, but you know what? This is a decolonization project. The idea is that Palestinians were living happily there in the land, and they had been for centuries, and then Great Britain came in and they forced the colonization of Jewish people back into that land in 1948. Some even like to go on to kind of further this intersectionality narrative to say that the Jews are basically white. You know, in that, so therefore, this is another example of white colonization of people of color. But that is a completely fallacious comparison that is really driven more by theory than it is facts. I mean, you know, historical facts, the Jewish presence in the land, it stretches back for centuries. And I'm not even here primarily talking about Moses and Abraham and the Jewish people at the time of Jesus. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about, you know, modern Israel right now is home to about 9 million Jews, most of whom are descended from people who migrated back to the Holy Land before 1949. They say that the biggest years were between 1881 and 1949 before Israel became a state. So it wasn't like Great Britain just brought them in and said, okay, here, you know, this is your new land. Don't worry about the people who are already there. Just manifest destiny. You take it from them. In fact, when you go back and look at it, Great Britain had turned against the Zionist movement in the 1930s. And from 1937 to 1939, they actually were moving toward an Arab state there with no Jewish state at all. But because there were so many Jews already living there, in 1947, a compromise was made, especially after the horrific things with the Holocaust. And they were looking at the Jews in Palestine and the ones that were having to flee after, you know, all the devastation of World War II. They said, okay, here's our solution. The United States devised the partition of that area into two states, one Arab and one Jewish. It was the two-state solution that that we hear a lot about today. But the reason it never happened was in 1948, Arab forces rejected the two-state solution that the UN was trying to bring in, and they attacked Israel. And that led to the aborting of the quest for a Palestinian state because the idea was that Israel should have no part of the land, that land was exclusively the property of Palestinians and Muslims in the area, and that therefore there would be no rest until Israel just as a state ceased to exist. And that was the idea.
Real quick, because I think that is, I think just the way you framed it is helpful for me, because I do feel like some of the loudest voices are kind of on those two sides, right? It's either everything Israel does is good because they're God's chosen country and so they're allowed to do anything.
Yeah, I got my in case of the rapture, this car will be unmanned bumper sticker, and this is all part of the thing.
This is all part of that. And so we've got it. They're right. Or kind of the opposite, which is kind of that, you mentioned this earlier, maybe a little bit more of like the intersectionality kind of framework starts coming into play. Israel's the oppressor. Palestine or Hamas, whatever category, I think people get them a little bit, you know, conflated, right. But become the oppressed. And so then they're kind of the moral high ground, regardless of what happens. What they're doing is right. And so, yeah, I mean, it feels like the two choices we're offered are very extreme. But would you say, right, kind of, is that how you're seeing it as well, with those two buckets?
Yeah, I'm seeing, exactly. Well said, Matt, because I'm seeing that those two narratives, because they're false, they lead people to manipulate the situations and circumstances, present half the truth to fit this narrative,
yeah,
and then to really go to extremes. You know, those are going to, as I see it, represent the two extreme positions,
yeah,
the critical race intersectionality theory, and then also the kind of the hyper fundamentalist, you know, premillennial, you know, everything Israel does is good theory, which brings us to today, October 7th of last year. You know, more than 3,000 Hamas militants invaded Israel from Gaza. I mean, the statistics on this are just horrendous. It killed well over 1,000. I think it was like 766 civilians in that number, many of whom were women and children that were intentionally targeted. I mean, we saw the images of mutilated infants and took a minimum of over 250 more as captives. I think you can just say Hamas is not a good faith group. It's an Islamic militant group. They're not after peace. They're not trying to come up with a solution. But they're a militant group formed in 1987 whose charter calls for the genocide of Jews and the establishment of Sharia law, the call for unrestrained and unceasing holy war to obtain that objective. They categorically reject any negotiated resolution, anything that would say, okay, you've got all these Jewish people living here. How do we do that? It just, you know, the river to the sea. That's the idea. The whole thing should belong to that, and Jews should, you may have even heard the chance of, you know, basically going back to Poland. That's where they say that the Jews should go back to, is Poland, because that's their real home. So what happened on October 7th was not like a few stray people that just decided to act violently. That is completely in line with Hamas's explicit aims and stated objectives. The attack was unprovoked. It was unspeakably brutal and plainly genocidal. So whatever you think the solution is over there, this was a horrendously unjust act, and we have to acknowledge that. And Israel has, as most of us would think, we would have a right to ourselves. They have a right to defend themselves. That is not to say, I want to say this again, that how Israel has responded has been right or even, you know, not necessarily appropriately proportional. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just rejecting the idea that any and all violence done by Palestinians is justified because it's under this narrative of this, the freedom battle of the oppressed against an oppressor. That narrative is just not true, that it's like this colonization thing that came in. And speaking of that, you know, to those who say that the Jewish presence in the land of Palestine is another example of white colonization, I mean, of course, there are some of the Jewish people who have lighter skin, as many Jews in their years of living in European lands, some of them intermarried with Europeans, but many do not, because not all of them were forced into European lands. The Jewish people, of course, are not originally or even primarily today an Anglo-European group. They were a Middle Eastern group, and then they were scattered through all kinds of persecution and migration, and they've intermarried with the people that are, you know, that they've migrated with. And so even today, if you go into Israel, you've got a pretty eclectic blend of secondary ethnicities that are mixed in with that primary Hebrew ethnicity, and that affects the color of the skin. And by the way, for our listeners, if you're looking for a slightly deeper dive into this, there's a great article in The Atlantic that came out just actually not too long ago, written by Simon Montefiore, Montefiore, that really kind of lays out a lot of these historical realities and the current questions. Of course, you know, since then, we know that the events of October 7th have led to an ongoing escalation there in the Israel-Hamas conflict. I will tell you, Matt, my heart grieves some of the reports of death, not just on the Israeli side. In fact, a lot of them that we just see, the innocent lives in Gaza, people who just kind of write that off as collateral, particularly innocent people caught up in this.
Yeah.
I mean, the heartbreaking pictures of infants and children's, and then sometimes what I'll just honestly say is an infuriating Israeli callousness about the collateral, damage that's going on. I have a Muslim friend who says that for the last 4 months, he's seen pictures of children and infants killed in the crossfire. Feels like it's almost every day he sees a new one. He says in almost every Muslim that he knows has a first or second degree connection with a non-combatant who's been killed over there. And we grieve that with our Muslim friends and neighbors and know that this is a very difficult situation. But the point is, I do believe that even as we grieve those reports and as we lament any loss of life, particularly innocent life, and as we rightly call upon Israel to act justly in their response and hold them to that, the narrative that Palestinians should just kind of have free rein to enact as much violence as possible because they're just decolonizing this land is something we can and should reject. Some of what we're seeing, even in mainstream places, you know, just college campuses. We've seen that, you know, chancellor from the river to the sea. Those are just thinly veiled calls for the expulsion or the justified, essentially, genocide of all Jews from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. And that's an egregious thing. So Matt, just to sum all this up, I think Christians have responsibility. We need to do our main thing, which is to pray and advocate for justice. And we need to preach the gospel and work for peace in the Middle East. And I think we can and should call out acts like those carried on by Hamas. We should call them what they are, and we should not sugarcoat it. They are evil. It's inhumane violence that does nothing that accurately reflects the complexities of the historical situation in the Holy Land, and it does nothing to further a solution towards peace. That piece of property has been, you know, over the centuries, you know, the Jews and the Romans and then the Christians and the Muslims taking from them and the Christians taking it back and the Muslims taking it back and then this dynasty and this dynasty. If we really want a solution, it's going to have to be something that is done with a proper respect for life there and a proper respect for property, and that really looks to help people to be settled, to be at peace. And we just got to be committed to call it injustice and to pray for the people that are in the positions of influence to be able to find a solution that works for everybody.
Yeah, JD, I think I think the words you used there at the end, and I think the even just feels like the thread throughout everything you're saying is as Christians, we are on the side of God's true justice. Mm. And both of those kind of poles that we mentioned at the beginning are, you know, not really, they're perversions of God's justice in one way or the other. And so fighting to call out injustice, to fight for justice. But JD, thanks for walking through this. I mean, this is just challenging. It's a challenging topic. Grappling with it, I think, is also kind of what Christians are called to do, right? We're called to go to God, process with other people, think in biblical terms, but also not kind of fall into easy traps of how do I make this as easy and simple for myself as possible? And so we have to grapple with it using those biblical frameworks that you use. So JD, that's really, really helpful. And so next week, we're going to be continuing our kind of a little mini series of one-off questions. And we are going to be talking about a great evangelism question. How do you share the gospel with a staunch atheist? So that's what we'll be talking about next week. And go ahead and take a moment right now. If you're not already subscribed, subscribe on Spotify or wherever you record your podcasts so you get our episodes straight to your phone or whatever it is, wherever you listen. And then also, we're on YouTube. So you can be watching these on YouTube, and you can subscribe at j.d.greer. And we'll see you next time on Ask the Pastor.